total funds that we need to participate in this project have been raised will be available. Then they will be released from escrow. We have with us here, I've taken a great deal of time explaining much of this. There are publications that are available through the U.S. Department of Commerce. These are available at the Chamber of Commerce. I believe they still have a supply. One is Financing Your Economic Development Under the Area Redevelopment Act. And this publication goes more into detail on the financing and even touches on local development companies.
Is that at the Chamber of Commerce?
Now, the reason that Channel Rich decided on the debenture method of financing is that Channel Rich is a nonprofit organization, and there's not much future in buying stock in a nonprofit organization. Now, what is a debenture? Actually, the word debenture comes from the word owing. So you might think that all types of a debenture is the same as any type of bond. However, in the United States, a debenture has usually been used to raise money where there was no security to pledge to back up these debentures. But in this case, since a debenture is the only form of security that Channel Rich is going to offer, this debenture has, excuse me, has the full force of a first mortgage type bond, and is a real good secure type of debt instrument. Now, I believe the board has elected to issue these debentures for a period of 15 years. Now, this, as Ross has pointed out, allows the local person who has a project that he thinks will bring in new industry and help create jobs for Fairbanksons and for members of the 19th Election District economic area here, to come up with the needed 10% financing that we must have from local participation before the Area Redevelopment Administration will come up with any funds. Now, these debentures are to pay 5% interest per annum. Now, why do I think that this is a good investment? I think that in dealing with people in investments, I usually say, and everybody, all the financial consultants will tell you that you need three things to have a good, sound
I quote. Are city employees using city purchasing power to get discounts and avoid sales taxes on purchases of automotive parts or personal uses, unquote? City Manager Norby replied, and I quote, there are many internal procedures with hundreds and hundreds of transactions every day. I just don't have the capacity to answer these questions in detail, unquote. Councilman Brewington then replied, and I quote, I would think, Mr. Norby, that because of that incident in the financial department, you would look for other incidents. He was referring to the dismissal of Mr. Whitfield, former city controller and treasurer. In the discussion, Mayor Rebar stated that these are serious accusations to make. Councilman Brewington replied that it was not making accusations, but merely asking questions of the city manager. Mayor Rebar then stated that he felt this was unfair to the city manager, as he could not have all these particular facts before him at the meeting, and that even in the federal cabinet, the president would forewarn a member of the executive that he had questions before he would bring them up in public. At this point, Councilman Boucher entered the discussion by stating that he felt the mayor had no right to challenge the councilman's right to question the city manager or any member of the city administration. The discussion became a heated three-way debate until the mayor recessed the meeting. During the recess, the argument took on an informal form in the corridors of the federal building. A letter from Dr. Charles Lafferty, superintendent of the Fairbanks Public Schools, was read to the city council last night. The letter stated that the Fairbanks School Board, and I quote, has been petitioned by a taxpayer to establish a limit on the amount of sales tax collected within the school district on a single item, unquote. The letter referred to the provision in the city's tax structure that has a limit on any one item of $30. The letter asked for the mayor the major reasons that this was established by the city, and then went on to say, and I quote, the major objection that has been raised by the members of the Board of Education to establish the limitation is that they feel it discriminates against the purchase of less expensive items, generally speaking, the small taxpayer, unquote. Then a letter from City Manager Clifford Norby was read. He pointed out that this provision was made primarily for the benefit of the automotive dealers in the Fairbanks community, that this would protect them from unfair competition from other areas like Anchorage, where there was either no sales tax or the tax structure would permit them to compete with local retailers. The letter further argued, rather urged, the Fairbanks School Board to seriously consider this provision in their tax structure. Last night, the City Council held a public hearing and second reading on Ordinance Number 1133, which calls for a special election for voters' approval of a $2 million bond issue for water treatment plant and extensions. In the public hearing, only one person spoke against the ordinance. Bernard Miller stated that this was a general obligation bond request, and thus would place the residents of the community in further debt by mortgaging their property. Mr. Miller suggested that the council pass a resolution stating that they do not intend to use all of the revenue bonding capacity that might be available to them to offset this particular financial obligation on behalf of the city. Several council members stated that since the city could not only issue $2.6 million in revenue bonds, they could never actually issue their $6 million that as authorized last October with the voters, and that the resolution suggested was not necessary. The ordinance was then passed with an effective date of March 2, 1962, and that the special election would be held on April 24, 1962. A civil defense plan was submitted to the council last night. This report was prepared by Colonel Witt, Fairbanks Civil Defense Administrator. On this point, Councilman Boucher stated that in this report, as well as others he had read, the question of communication with people always comes up. Until now, Conrad has been the method for informing people in danger areas. However, he pointed out that the enemy could eliminate this form of communication simply by the method of jamming the frequencies used for Conrad. Boucher went on to say, and I quote, "If people are uninformed, they panic. At Pearl Harbor, we were under attack for at least 45 minutes before we really believed that we were being attacked by the Japanese," unquote. Councilman Boucher then reported that he had been in touch with a firm called Teleglobe in New York that had devised a system of communication with the residents of the community that would be connected with their telephone system. He stated that even taped messages could be transmitted through this system from Central Civil Defense Control, that this system would be able to inform the general public and base of the amount of radiation in any given area, and by a method of people switching off this system upon an order from Central, they would be able to determine the extent of human losses in any given area. The councilman then instructed through a motion that the city manager, municipal utility systems manager, get in touch with this New York firm for further information. Another council action last night, the council rejected bids for one fire department pumper. The bids were called for to be opened at last night's meeting. However, the council decided to return them unopened, and that after further study on the city's needs for this equipment, the administration would draw up specifications and ask for a new bid. The council considered a report by City Public Works Director Robert Crow relating to city space utilization. The Division of Highways knew on July 1st, 1960, it would have to seek a supplemental appropriation, probably this year, the agency's chief accountant testified last night. L.A. Woodman told the Senate Highways Investigating Committee, however, that the exact amount wasn't known until last January 13th, 4 days before Public Works Commissioner Richard A. Downing announced that a supplemental appropriation of $4,008,333 would be sought. Governor William A. Egan has stated that he did not know extra funds would be needed until January 15th, when he returned from a trip outside. We were aware something like this was coming on July 1960, July 1st, Woodman said while being questioned by Senator Vance Phillips, Republican of Anchorage. There was nothing in the budget for a ferry system, yet we had a ferry system, and there was nothing for scale house operators, yet we had scale house operators, too. There was nothing anyone could do about it. We didn't even know what actually would be needed eventually. Later, Woodman was asked by Senator John B. Coghill, Republican of Indiana, why the division didn't ask for additional funds last year if it was known some would be required, rather than waiting until this year. Woodman said the division simply didn't know how much funds actually would be needed. He told Senator Lester Bronson, Democrat of Nome, the $4 million supplemental appropriation was needed because state matching funds were spent for non-reimbursable items. A strike was halted operations in the two Prince of Wales Islands logging camps of Ketchikan Pulp Company. The exact cause of the dispute, which came 2 weeks after the camps of Hollis and Thorn Bay were reopened, was not announced by the company or the union. The loggers are members of the International Woodworkers of America.
Details on the state and local scene brought to us by your Northern Commercial Company.
The New York. That was Tuesday, February the 27th, 1962. That was a council report and a news report over KFRB radio here at Fairbanks, Alaska.
Flare-ups, which we will try to report officially from the minutes of the council meeting, will be brought into a little better focus as far as the action of the council, the action of the city manager, and the advisory, the public relations, you might say, information from these bodies to the press is concerned. This is a situation which is going to require some very delicate reporting, perhaps, and this is why we report the council activities only through the official proceedings as they are written up in the minutes by the city clerk. And that is the latest on the local and the Alaskan news scene to this moment this evening.
such as the Alaska Carpenters Council. Several things happened yesterday in the legislature. Several other things will happen today. And a number of things are not happening. Starting out on the positive side of the ledger, we find that the House yesterday acceded to amendments by the Senate to House Bill 207, which is otherwise referred to as the Junkyard Bill. If you know of any junkyard owners, they are probably now whistling, "Don't fence me in," because the bill, which now goes to the governor, does just that. This bill, which was introduced by Representatives Bob Stratton and Grant Pearson, makes it mandatory, come September 1, 1962, that these eyesores be fenced in such a manner that they no longer offend the eye. The bill is fairly comprehensive, and where the cities can't do it, the state can, and there are also provisions for boroughs when those mobile political subdivisions finally come into being. In other actions yesterday, the Senate kept their hands out of the fire until today by deferring any action on Senate Bills 244 and 245, which would appropriate some $700,000 to the governor's rural development, disaster, and depressed areas legislation. This chunk of money has caused many legislators to wince, but the legislation has, in political terminology, what is known as a strong motherhood factor. Actually, despite protestations to the contrary, the legislation is not a slush fund, but it is highly unusual, to say the least. First, although it was introduced by 12 Democratic senators, it does not necessarily have the governor's blessing. Secondly, it has a little bit in it for just about everyone, and even some Republican legislators will have to think twice before voting against it. If the fishing season is bad, if the construction season isn't too hot, if economic conditions are generally bad around the state, then, friends, a lot of people will look fondly upon those that voted for this legislation. The chances of these two bills passing the Senate are fairly good unless some of the 12 sponsors suffer acute panic at the size of the bill. On other matters, we find that the House Commerce and Labor Committee will hear sometime today about Representative Walter Cuber's amendments to the overtime bill, which would exempt innkeepers from the provision. I hope that the witness enjoys his stay and his visit because the chances of anything happening this session are fairly remote. Mr. Cuber is trying to exempt one industry from the provisions of the new law, and it is certain that many legislators will take a dim view of this no matter what their views on the overtime bill. There has been much emphasis in various debates in this legislature on the word little. There are the little people and the little businessmen, and various varieties playing upon that same shop-worn theme. If I may coin an equally overworked cliche, it would seem that the state employees are the forgotten people of this session. Certainly no bill pertaining to this important group has been seen or heard from since the session got underway. Both the graduated pay raise bill and employment security benefits for state employees are firmly tied up in committees. Since both of these bills were introduced last session, there is no excuse for this delay of action. Yesterday, when I asked Lewis Dishner, lobbyist for the Teamsters Union, what progress these bills were making, Dishner said, and I quote, "I can't seem to generate any interest on the part of the legislature in these bills." He continued by saying that a number of state employees, although not too many, belong to the Teamsters Union, and also pointed out that other labor lobbyists had tried to impress various legislators on the need for this legislation without much luck. Obviously, then, we have the forgotten people. The bulk of state employees live and work in three towns, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and, needless to say, Juneau. They are forbidden to lobby for themselves by executive decree, and mainly they are not organized in such a manner that they can present their side of the picture. Therefore, organized labor has taken up the cudgels for them, although it benefits us little, if at all, except that we think that the legislation is worthwhile and beneficial to this state. I can only urge state employees to stand up and speak for themselves. If they don't, well, the old saying, "Nothing ventured, nothing gained," will again be applicable to their plight. Now, this is Ron Metcalf, your reporter on Legislative Digest.
And, of course, the children turned out of the school and what turned out to be a practice drill, fortunately. All of the fire equipment, as is usually the case, went out when school alarms go off. There was no fire, however, at Monroe School this morning. And we have a snow removal forecast here from the city. All cars or vehicles parked will be hauled away. This is a two-week-long affair. The south end of the town will be done this week, the week of March the 1st. The rest of the city will be tackled this next week, and the snow crews are doubling their efforts to get the snow out of the way, as spring is upon us, and also probably more snow. State police are holding 6 bicycles in storage.
For you and Ruby. Pretend you're happy when you're blue. It isn't very hard to do. And you'll find happiness without a man whenever you pretend. Remember, nothing's bad as it may seem. Each little thing you haven't got could be a lot if you pretend. Piano too. So if you sing this little song, you'll be remembering all day long. The world is mine, it can be yours, my friend, if only you pretend. This is Margie. This is Margie Gale. I'm from Frisco. I weigh about 105 when I haven't got much on.
Is any chance of getting your telephone number?
No chance. No, don't have it. Won't give it.
Where do you live, on Knob
Hill? Near and around. I live closer to the bay, Slob Hill.
Slob Hill? What do you think of Frank Caruso?
Frank Caruso? I haven't formed an opinion yet. It'll take me another 150 years to do that.
Now, here's what's coming off. The Board of Regents meets down there at Juno there on the 8th, 9th, and 10th of March. Now, if you can get the plenum or get the something going on with them at that time, I think that would be the solution to it. Yeah. Well, that's good, Forbes. Well, that was a... I went out there and Dr. Woods. He's in the States at the present. Yeah, that's right. And I got to talk with Harold Bird. He seemed to know all about it. Okay. Yeah, that's the deal. That's the deal. They figured, you know, that the pioneers wanted the university to put up some dough to get the... No, that's... That's right. Yeah, I think if we can get that through, I think we'll make it. Yeah, I told him that today. Yeah, I explained that to him. They had it there. They were misinformed or something. I don't know. No. No, well, Forbes, a few folks will do that down there when... Well, that's good. Just a minute.
You say you want to say anything else?
No, unless there's something you want us to do here.
Is there anything else you want us to do here, Forbes?
Happy to do that, Patricia.
Well... Yeah, did you get the That's good. Did you get the petitions down there yet? Oh, I see, yes. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, well, okay, Forbes. Just a minute here. Harry wants to say a word for you. All right. Yeah, goodbye, Forbes.
Hey, Forbes. You been getting the paper down there regularly? The newsletter? Well, some of that stuff's all tangled up in the paper. The other night, somebody started in about the school land down here. Somebody put it on the air that the Pioneer Park was part of the school land. They're all tangled up on it, so we don't tell them nothing no more. Let them get tangled good. Oh. And then last night's council, they had quite a hot session over it, and the Park and Recreation Board reaffirmed their recommendation to the city council to support the Pioneer Project, the one that Rebar accepted, and they filed it, and then he turned around and voted against it. So they're all tangled up last night. They held a recess and had a session out in the hall. So I guess they're all tangled up. They didn't put much in the paper about it, but there was one little item got on the air before they stopped it. You see, the minutes are edited by the city manager and the city clerk and the mayor. They don't let them put anything in the minutes they don't want in it. Now, I did go to Wally Draws and ask if I could get the tape recordings from the meetings and make a transfer tape off it. He said, well, legally, I got a right to. I have a right to legally to request a copy of the actual tape recordings of the meeting. So if you find a problem where you want that, I have 6 months to get those off in. Unless somebody deliberately destroyed them. Yeah, but I want to let you know what we'd have to do if you wanted to get the actual record of what goes on. Well, I can take them myself. It won't cost the pioneers anything if I go and get them myself. It's just a matter of time. You see, each one of those recordings is about 2 hours long. And I just take my recording down over the tape and put them on the machine and run them off onto ours. Like I make those transfer tapes. You see, if they got real tough about it, we get a court order for them, like I used to get in the States. I used to go to the county judge and get a court order for them. They had to give them to me. See? Yeah, well, knowing something beforehand, that is public records, and they can't conceal those. I don't care what they put in the minutes. You see, the minutes are edited by the mayor and the city manager. And they put what they want in there and eliminate what they don't want. The tape is the actual tape taken in the courtroom. See? And they have to hold those 6 months by law. So you knew about it. If they want to run a bluff on them, well, we could... I talked to Wally about it, and he said he didn't want to hear them. He said, I think you'll have to put me in a room someplace then, because I'm going to take them if they ask for them. You see? They want to get tough and keep going a little deeper, Forbes. They're going to let them know the pioneers are still in Alaska. The other night at the meeting, I asked them if we'd run all the plane jumpers out of here years ago. It didn't look like it now. Well, anything else new? How about that bill dealing with directly with the nonprofit organization?
Well, that would be what settled it, and then we could go ahead. Frank Young and some of us are working along some further ideas if this develops right, so we can get some tourist dollars up this way. We're talking about the dog mushers, could even have dog teams here in the winter, charter teams, and we could probably restore some of the Circle Trail. That was Frank Young's baby. And the Miller Roadhouse, those folks, we've got it on tape. They want that left to the state if they pass on as a...
Pioneers.
To the Pioneer State Shrine, you know. Mr. Miller, we've got that in tape if you ever want to hear it from them. And then if you'd restore about four roadhouses between here and Circle, they could have 2 weeks round trip with dog teams in the winter here and get some winter activity here. We're working on a lot of angles for us, but if you don't work on them, you don't get anything. We'll get some more people behind if we spread it out a little. Is that okay? We'll see you then. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
But of particular interest to me, and I'm sure it'll be to everyone in the state, was a report on a newly developed natural gas process for upgrading the quality of low-grade iron ore, of which there seems to be a tremendous amount in the territory. It's scattered through various areas, but we also have lots of gas, so that we could reach at least a few of these areas with gas. And by golly, Jim, it was just thrilling to hear him talk and the optimism that he showed in this. Now, mind you, that this is not something that's going to happen overnight or be brought into a production overnight, but it is something that we can aim towards, and when the day does come, we'll really be there.
One of the things that came to my mind as he was speaking for us was the statement that he made about this being a very internationally competitive business, this iron ore processing.
Yeah, that's right. And what I understand in talking to oil men from the oil areas in the state, that we have a natural gas down on the Kenai that is a very, very high grade of gas, that it doesn't take any cleaning or processing to put it on the market. So we have that in our favor. And just a word along the matter of gas, which leads back to oil. He outlined the history of Arthur D. Little Incorporated and their thinking on oil several years back. And it appears that 2.5 years ago that they recommended and showed the possibility of a oil refinery being installed in the state and its economic value, not only to the persons that put it in, but also to the state. And now we are in the process of, Standard Oil is in the process of putting in a plant which will go into construction, I believe, about a month or 6 weeks from now.
Well, this economic impact for us of the oil industry on Alaska's economy is the one that we're depending on. I remember another statement that was made by the same gentleman last year when we were hearing a report from the same company. It goes right along with what you were saying, and that is that the natural gas field that they have discovered in the Kenai area is the only one large natural gas field that's located just adjacent to Tidewater, which gives us a very tremendous advantage in the international field. But at the same time, he also pointed out that the cost of doing business in Alaska right at the present time is so very high that we're going to have to do something to equalize this before we'll be able to sell these products abroad. Well, let's see. There was something else interested.
Well, I guess we'd better pass over the balance of Mr. Matthews' talk and get over on House Bill 120, which is a codification of the commercial law. 279 pages of it, 23 pages of index. Over 300 pages there of law that we accepted this morning, discussed, and being of such tremendous length and having the advantage of a year's observation of it, the House accepted it, and with the numerous amendments, finally passed it. Now, this is a code that's going to do commercial business a lot of good, banking, small business, and also small purchasers. It'll do all of us a lot of good. I think it's a good bill. Not perfect, but good.
Well, I think that it was pointed out too, Forbes, in the discussion on this one, that it would be a great help on interstate commerce. That is, the one state doing business with Alaska will know just exactly what our commercial laws are, and it'll be a little easier for them to carry on.
There's 14 other states right now that have this same law, practically the same.
I understand the same code, the Model Act, the same one as we considered yesterday, is being considered during this session of the legislature by the state of New York.
That's right.
And once it is accepted by the state of New York, it's felt that all of the other states in the Union will follow right along.
Oregon has it, and the state of Washington is considering it also at the present time.
Interesting thing, as we were going through that bill this morning, I was impressed with the number of words in it, since we had it in our committee, the Commerce and Labor Committees, for some time, and I'd like to congratulate the Committee on Judiciary that did the really backbreaking work on this one, and reading it line for line and word for word, making the corrections. We had some 85 amendments, which were really minor ones, and this committee did all of the work on this thing, and it was really a tremendous job. I figured up about 90,000 words in that one, Forbes.
Oh, golly. Well, it could very easily be 279 pages. It'll take care of a lot of words.
I should say so.
The Attorney General's office certainly comes in for a lot of credit on this, too. They did a lot of research.
Another bill of interesting discussion yesterday morning was second committee substitute for House Bill 342, which concerned the Governor's Advisory Commission on Fisheries. Would you care to comment on that a little bit just before we close, Forbes?
The only comment I can make on it, Jim, is that if I didn't like it, still don't like it. It's one of these advisory boards that's set up to advise, or commissions that's set up to advise a board that's already in being, that's claimed to be a good board, which is the Fish and Game Board. There certainly has been no criticism of that board so far, and now they're setting up or attempting to set up an advisory board that will could very easily be 180 degrees away from what the Fish and Game Board does. I think if we do well to stick with our Fish and Game Board and let them do the advising.
Well, that's it from the state capitol for today. This has been the Minority Report with Representatives Jim Binkley and Forbes Baker. We'll look forward to talking to you again tomorrow, same time, same station.
The villages of Cake and Angoon, and in this opinion he declared, quote, Congress has neither authorized the use of fish traps at Cake and Angoon nor empowered the Secretary of Interior to do so. In the case of these two villages, Frankfurter pointed out that their situation differed from that of the Metlakatlans in that neither Cake nor Angoon has been provided with a reservation, and in that there is no statutory authority under which the Secretary of the Interior might permit either village to operate fish traps contrary to state law. Frankfurter's second opinion, dealing with the Metlakatlans, said they were on a reservation and that federal authority was clearly preserved over the reservation. And a reminder, too, here to members of Igloo No. 4 and Auxiliary No. 8 of their meeting this evening, Pioneers of Alaska, and Adolph Stock called this morning to also remind us that pictures of the officers of the Igloo and the Auxiliary will be taken after the two meetings this evening. Well, police continue to question various people regarding the death of Raymond Wright sometime Saturday morning before 8:15, but no arrests have been made. Wright was shot twice in his nightclub early Saturday morning. City police did arrest three youths last night at midnight at the Tip Top Chevrolet on South Cushman and lodged them in state jail charged with petty larceny. Police found one of them down beside a car removing hubcaps while the other two were waiting in the car as apparently lookouts. The three, all from Fort Wainwright, are Brill Tucker, Clarence Beck, both 19, and Richard McManus, 21. Elsewhere in the Fairbanks area, things were quiet and the weather beautiful. Fairbanksons flocked to the nearby hills to ski and give the children a sled ride or just sit in the sun. In Seattle, it was cloudy and cool with rain. In the Midwest, it either snowed or rained and was miserable. In Fairbanks, it was wonderful. Well, I don't know whether or not there's been an announcement of this news-wise, but we had a letter in our mail this morning from the America Junior Miss Pageant and informed us that Miss Beverly Mims of 823 9th Avenue has been chosen as the outstanding high school senior in the state of Alaska.
Postponed in the House today. The measure was killed by a vote of 21 to 16. It would have placed the question in the 1962 general election ballot as to whether the voters would prefer a blanket-type primary election, which would permit cross-party voting, to the present party primary. The bill was authored by Republican Representative Benny Leonard of Anchorage. The Senate session today in Juneau was limited to an hour and a half, during which time the upper chamber acted on five resolutions. Among the resolutions was one asking Congress to place the Alaska Railroad under the jurisdiction of the Interstate Commerce Commission. Another commended the Coast Guard for the job it was doing on Alaska's coastline. Senator John B. Coghill, Republican of Nenana, asked the Senate today if he would seek an answer from Governor William Egan as to when he planned to submit his promised five-year capital construction plan. The Senate refused to do so after Senator John A. McNeese of Nome said such action wasn't necessary because any senator had the right to contact the governor on specific legislation. Egan told the legislature in his budget message that he planned to submit the capital construction program late during this session. And Governor Egan submitted legislation in the Senate today which would prohibit deceptive advertising or so. I'm sure there must be sale of civil defense aids. Conviction would bring a fine, prison sentence, and so on. And Governor Egan has signed two more bills into law. One extends until July 20, 1964, the time a resident of Tidelands outside the municipalities has in which to file preference rights on the land that he occupies. The Department of General Administration reports, incidentally, down in Juneau today that 44 lobbyists have registered for the 1962 session. The lobbyists represent a wide variety of firms and businesses or labor groups. 23 business or professional associations are represented by lobbyists. 18 individual firms are represented. Labor has 7 lobbyists on hand in Juneau. We have more news now in just a moment. Well, here in Fairbanks, City Manager Clifford Nordby, at the windup of last night's City Council meeting, which dragged out until 11:30, hit back at his tormentor of several weeks standing, neophyte councilman Darrell Brewington, by having 4 letters read on the subject of employee discounts and so on. The week previously, the councilman had told the council and asked Nordby why certain city employees were getting discounts on personal purchases, and then said that he had understood from one person that purchases of oil, fuel, and gasoline could be made cheaper if they were put out on bid. He also, incidentally, said that one business house had complained that city purchases were no longer made at his business house because the business house had refused to give any discounts to city employees. And this, of course, turned out to be, at least from the letters, completely false. The letters from Sam Busby of BNC Auto Electric, Gerald Haight of Automotive Parts and Equipment, George Cooper of Texaco Fuel Division, and Virgil E. Dean, manager of Standard Oil Company, were read last night. All the letters stated that discounts were common practice and that they were given to government employees as well as employees of large firms as a policy that has been carried on for many years. A letter from Virgil Dean is self-explanatory. I'm going to read part of it anyway, as much as I have time for it. During Nordby's report, Brewington interrupted to speak, but Councilman E.M. Ted Cox, already nettled beyond endurance by a jab of Brewington's earlier in the evening, asked that the manager continue without interruption since this was his report and he had the floor. Mayor Joseph Rebar concurred, and Nordby continued. And here are part of the letters. This is from Virgil Dean of Standard Oil, manager locally here. I am writing you this note, and this is addressed to City Manager Clifford Nordby, to assure you that action taken in last night's council meeting by Mr. Brewington, this was the week previous to last night, was in no way instigated, solicited, or requested by myself or anyone in my employ. The first contact I had with Mr. Brewington regarding the purchase of petroleum products by the city of Fairbanks was last Friday, at which time he asked if he could talk to me in my office on Monday, February 26. The information he had concerning the purchasing policies of the city of Fairbanks agreed almost in total with the information I possessed. When he left, I believe he did understand how I felt on the items listed below, and he lists the following items. One, that I did not believe it was to the city's best interest in not calling for new contracts each year. And this, Brewington apparently was right when he said that bids had not been asked for contracts for a 2-year period. Two, Dean continued, that we lost the lube oil and grease business at the city garage due to what I considered lack of service or solicitation by my sales representatives. And this refutes the idea that the business was lost in the business establishment because the business refused to go along with city employees' request for special handling. Three, that I had discussed with you and Robert Crow the petroleum contract that is discussed with the city manager and Robert Crow, head of public works, the petroleum contract, and was informed at this meeting that you would extend the contract for a short period due to the difficulties of changing suppliers in the winter. Further, that we had asked Mr. Slenis several times during last summer when this would be done with various answers received. And this was one thing that Brewington was getting at, and which he was correct. That some of the information he had was nothing better than rumors, in my opinion, referring to Brewington, although I had been told the same thing. That they concerned heating oils as purchased by city employees in groups at special prices or discounts, and that other non-government groups also enjoyed such discounts by some heating oil distributors. That our marketing to consumers was through the heating oil distributors, thus any information I had heard did not concern me directly, nor was it firsthand. Five, that the city had requested during the past year bids for antifreeze and the light fuel oil for oiling the city street, contrary to his belief. That is, contrary to Brewington's. That in my opinion, it was not to the city's best interest to request bids for the lubricating oils and greases used by the city. That I felt it would be more economical in the long run to request all three companies to submit, after their own survey, their recommendations, as well as the service they could offer to a group designated by the city manager, that this could be reviewed each year. We did not agree on this, and I still believe the city will not benefit from any small saving at the loss of qualified engineering services available through most oil companies. And he goes on to say, Cliff, addressing the city manager, again, I want to tell you that I feel sure that you know I have not been in agreement with your handling of the city petroleum contract. I have, however, discussed this matter with you and Robert Crow in person, as I will continue to do so in the future, never through the city council or any of its members. I fight my own battles, I always have, and I always will. I will be happy to discuss any aspect of this incident with you at any time, and it is my sincere hope that this will not affect the high regard we hold for each other personally, nor professionally. Another letter, or two other letters I have copies here, three of them to be exact, carry along somewhat the same vein as to policy and granting discounts. One I would like to read here from, this one I had checked out here, from George Cooper, Texaco, and winds up by saying this letter is submitted to you in that the insinuations and allusions that have been cast by others, if correct in any way whatsoever, should be supported by fact rather than harming individuals' integrity by innuendo. I hereby submit my facts for your consideration. We'll have another item of news or two here in just a moment, but first, for Safeway, here is Carol Brooks.
Thanks, Maury. Okay, let's take a couple specials now from the produce department, where these will be effective on sale Monday through Wednesday. Remember the avocados that I brought up last week? Those beautiful avocados. Don't have one this week, Johnny. I wish I did. 2 for $0.29 they're going for again. 2 for $0.29. Those wonderful avocados they have over there, Calavos. The best kind of avocado there is. And then on this canned goods sale again, the annual March canned goods sale at Safeway, they're going to have Rath lunch meat, a 12-ounce can for 45 cents. 12-ounce can of Rath lunch meat for 45 cents. Don't forget the snack bar special, too. Through Wednesday, hot dogs will be for 19 cents. Hot dogs for 19 cents. So when you're down there shopping, take advantage of the snack bar special, hot dogs for 19 cents. Gee, I see somebody over there. She sure looks familiar. Come here a minute, will you?
Essential information. I didn't see any point in rewriting it. Pending a revision, I did forget it myself. It dawned on me today when I saw it. Pending a revision in the 1962 budget, the City Council will make no more purchase awards and suspend the issuance of bid invitations. The action was taken on Monday night on motion of Councilman Darrell Brewington and the second of Councilman Henry A. Rhett Boscher. The financial crisis resulting from a miscalculation in sales tax revenue projections came up at a conference meeting held this last week. City Manager Clifford Nordby estimated the city might expect to be short some $200,000 in revenues that they would expect to come in from local retail sales and, of course, the service tax. He said the situation resulted when the city boosted the tax from 2% to 3% last spring in favor of dropping the ad valorem tax on personal property. With the change occurring in mid-year, the revenue estimated to be derived from the boosted sales tax has fallen short of actual collections. First effect of the council's policy to delay the purchase was noted at the same meeting when the purchase award for a new record was deferred for 2 weeks. Nordby said that he expected his budget revisions to be ready in about 10 days, and the record truck purchase was tabled in anticipation that there will be sufficient funds for it at that time. A bid opening on towing and storage of impounded vehicles went ahead on schedule on Monday evening, and this both bids were no bids, so that this is going to have to be taken in again, too. The State Agricultural Stabilization and Conservation Service moved into new quarters in the Arctic Bowl at 954 Cowell Street here in Fairbanks, according to the State ASC Chairman, Darrell Baird.
Bruce, welcome to the report again. Bruce, I think that the first thing that we should talk about is our priority of legislation between the two houses that we have pretty well decided on as in our caucus as being the priority that the Republican Party would like to have this Democrat legislature pass. And what is your opinion of the most important one?
Well, House Bill 321, as you know, the Board of Education bill, which enables the commission, the board, to pick the commissioner and to take the commissioner out of partisan politics. And that is now in the Senate, and I'd like to know just what's holding that bill up, because it passed the House by a big margin.
Well, Bruce, I think that the matter on House Bill number 321, the Board of Education bill, is on dead center in Senator McNeely's committee, the Judiciary Committee, and it's being held there because they have the horsepower in that committee to keep it from coming on the floor. Now, if it was to come out on the floor and get a good airing and a good debate, why, I'm quite sure that it would pass. In fact, we have four of the Democrat senators that would join the Republican senators, which would give us a 11 or a 1 margin majority in the Senate to pass it. And the Democrats know this, and they don't want to see this educational board come out. And so what they're doing, they're playing on parliamentary rules and, you might say, blocking this legislation from coming out and having its fair hearing and not using the democratic processes.
Well, isn't Senator McNeely also the Democrat majority leader in the Senate and from Fairbanks?
That's right, Bruce. He's the majority leader. He's unalterably opposed to this type of legislation. He feels that the people of Alaska should not have any direction in their educational program, that he feels that this strong chief executive or a commissioner of education from the lower 48 can do a better job to direct the educational program for the state of Alaska than the people of Alaska, and I'm opposed to this thinking entirely.
Well, Senator McNeely from Fairbanks, the majority leader, the Democrat majority leader, certainly, I noticed on the other day on his desk he had a whole stack of letters. Doesn't he respond to the wants of the people in Fairbanks, or is he just obstinate?
Well, it's quite apparent that the majority in the Senate is not responding to the will of the people. We've had numerous letters, numerous telegrams. I think that the Senate has had more correspondence on the Board of Education bill in this session than they have any one other piece of legislation.
Senator Coghill, there's one other thing that I think is most important, too, and that is, as you notice, this administration, they've been resigning rapidly, and there's four or five vacancies occurred. Have you heard anything about the chief executive, Governor Egan, passing down some names for the legislature to confirm before we depart from here and adjourn?
No, I haven't, Bruce, and this is one of the other areas that disturbs me. Under the Constitution and also under our enabling legislation for these boards, advisory boards and commissions that we have within the state, why, the governor or the chief executive has to submit these names for approval by the legislature. This also brings up another subject that I think that is well worth mentioning at this time, that during the first part of the session, or on the 23rd of January to be exact, the governor said that he was going to bring down a capital improvement program, and this hasn't come down as yet. Now, they're talking about delay in the legislative processes. I'll agree with you that there are lots of delays. These people, it seems to me, are jockeying for position, that they're holding up the legislative processes to give themselves ample political equality or ample political advantage over we that are in the minority.
This has been your Minority Report of the Legislature, a special minority report from Juneau, presented each Monday through Saturday at the same time by the Legislative Minority Committee.
Club last Saturday morning have been brought out in the arrest of a 27-year-old Fairbanksan at the coroner's inquest now being held in Fairbanks. Richard Terrell was arrested at the home of his brother here in Fairbanks last night by state police at approximately 10 o'clock on charge of first-degree murder of Wright. Terrell, who had been employed with a local taxicab company, appeared this morning in the state magistrate's court before Magistrate Hugh Conley. Fairbanks attorneys William Taylor and Fred Crane are acting as defense counsel, and appearing for the state's attorney office was Herb Saul. The bail has been set at $100,000. Terrell is currently in the state jail. A preliminary hearing will be held Monday, March 12th at 2 p.m.
But shorter than the meetings have been for the past month. The council meeting was only 2.5 hours, or 1/2 hour less than the 2-hour limit. The meetings during the past month have usually exceeded 3 hours. Councilman Cox presided at last night's meeting as Mayor Rebar was absent. Under correspondence, Councilman Boucher requested the city clerk read a portion of the minutes of the city's Planning and Zoning Commission's meeting of March 7th. This was in relation to a petition from several business people who are located on Cushman Street stating their objection to set or any setback of that street. Councilman Boucher stated that he wants to make sure that the public understand what this objection had been raised, that this objection had been raised. Dr. Adolph Stock, president of Igloo No. 4, the Pioneers of Alaska, presented a letter to the council last night under the special order of business in the council's agenda. The letter was from Fairbanks Pioneers Welfare Committee. It outlined the problem the city presents to some of the Alaskan pioneers and retired people who have their homes condemned. The letter stated that these homes are quite adequate and safe for these people, and that by condemning them, the city was presenting a hardship to those elderly people. The letter stated further that the city's plans for a modern community should take into consideration the value that some of these old homes have. The letter pointed out that after the modern city is developed, and I quote, all you will have is another American city that features with features that can be duplicated anywhere in the United States. All the picturesque features which have made Fairbanks unique and a tourist attraction will be gone, unquote. On a motion by Councilman Boucher, the council instructed the city manager and building inspector to meet with the members of the Pioneers Welfare Committee on any proposed condemnation involving the homes of elderly people in the community. First Lieutenant Roger Burgraff, commanding officer of the local National Guard unit, presents a request that the council consider paying differential pay to city employees who were involved in National Guard duty for 2 weeks each year. He pointed out that the federal and state and governments grant this pay and do most private firms. He reported that there were four city employees who were now in the local unit. The consul requested the city manager to investigate the amount of salaries involved and report to the consul as soon as it was possible. Also considered under the special order of business on the consul agenda was a report brought up by Councilman Boucher. This was the conflict of interest report of last November, which had been drawn up by City Attorney Barry Jackson. Councilman Boucher complimented Mr. Jackson on his fine job he had done. On a motion by Councilman Boucher, the council instructed the city attorney to draft an ordinance incorporating a paragraph in the report and including a method of fixing guilt in the question of conflict of interest, and also to permit sole suppliers of any particular goods or service to be exempt from the provisions of this ordinance. Ordinance number 1133, which exempts certain nonprofit groups from paying sales taxes on sales at the Winter Carnival this year, was passed by the council. Jim Couch of Fairbanks Unlimited stated that he informed six of the 16 groups who have reserved booths at the fair that they would have to collect and pay the sales tax as they were profit-making firms. He reported that there would be 10 groups affected by this ordinance who would have booths at the carnival. At the public hearing last night on ordinance number 1137, Dwayne Hall, a member of the Planning and Zoning Commission, stated that he objected to rezoning the south part of Block 146, as it would mean that the north part would be rezoned, and so on. Dr. Spaulding, a local chiropractor who had originally requested the rezoning for business reasons, stated that the residents adjacent to this property had signed a petition to the effect that they had no objection to the rezoning of this area. The council in a tie vote rejected this ordinance. Boucher, Brewington, and Roberts voting in favor, and Cox, Ringstad, and Walker voting against. Councilman Brewington had moved that the city attorney be instructed to investigate the possibility of providing Dr. Spaulding with a deed restriction that would permit him to conduct the expanded business that he had desired in his original request for rezoning of the south part of Block 146. This motion was passed by the council. An ordinance slated to cause some controversy in next Monday night's meeting is number 1140, which would change the age of motor bicycle and scooter operators from the present 16-year limit to a proposed 14-year limit. This ordinance was drafted upon the request of a petition of parents in the Fairbanks community. Councilman Roberts remarked that in going over the petition, he noticed a large amount of names he did not recognize, and that over 50 of the signatures gave their address as Barry's Trailer Court. The council advanced the ordinance to public hearing and second reading for next Monday night. Ordinance number 1139, which would set aside certain city land for parks and playgrounds, was retained in the first reading for the purpose of presenting an amendment for next Monday night that would permit the Kiwanis Park to continue to operate in this city area. In other action last night, the city council passed without objection ordinance number 1138, which amends the water bond ordinance number 1133, providing for a special election or proposed $2 million water bond issue. The amendment changes the eligibility list of voters in the April 24th special election for the 1962 to the 1961 tax rolls. The council passed ordinance number 1141 to second reading and public hearing. This would change the tax assessment computation. The council postponed the appointment of a member to fill a vacancy in the Park, Recreation, and Cemetery Commission. And the council approves a duplicate liquor license request by Steve Bonich for the Persian Room, and also approved a liquor license transfer of the International Bar to L. Levi and Francis X. Worth. In other news on the city scene, missing person report, Robert Monroe Dick, age 33, is reported by Alaska State Police to be missing. He's 5 feet 4 inches tall in height, weighs 180 pounds. Has short black curly hair, brown eyes, wears blue jeans, blue GI parka, and brown leather boots. Mr. Dick drives a 1955 Ford half-ton pickup with a cream cab and frequently carries a dog sled on the truck. He has a cabin at Lost Lake and often hunts at Sheep Creek Road.